Pardon?
I'll hit record if
sure,
that's
sure.
okay.
Yeah, I'm okay now. We can start.
Okay, my name is Daniel Scher. I'm the Associate Director of the Innovations for Successful Societies project, and I'm here in Dar es Salaam with Advocate Francis Kiwanga.
Yes, please.
So thank you very much for taking time out of your day to meet with us. I'm sure it's been a long day, and I really appreciate
you're welcome.
Meeting with me now. So before we begin with some of the questions that I had for you, I wonder if you'd mind just briefly introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your current role and the career trajectory that has brought you here.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Francis Kiwanga. I'm the executive director for this organization, Legal Numeracy Center. I am graduate in law, undergraduate actually, hold LLB in law. And that is, I finished my law degree in 2003. And I joined civil service for 1 year, and then I joined the private sector for another year before I joined this organization to head a field office in Arusha. This is a sub region office in Arusha. And then I, since June last year, I joined this. I was appointed, actually promoted to be executive director for this organization, and so I'm here for, since June last year. About my organization, we are an advocacy organization. We are dealing with human rights and good governance. We are an NGO, and. We are not for profit, and membership. It is a membership organization where we have more than 70 individual members. We don't have corporate members, only individual members. And in terms of what we do, we have a strategic plan for 6 years, but now we have a strategic plan. We've divided the strategic plan for 3 years, which ends up this year, 2009. And from next year, we'll have another operation plan. So we are now doing evaluation for our current operation plan before we start another. What we do, we have divided the operation plan into three categories. One is legislative and the policy advocacy for social justice. What we do in this category, we conduct legal services to the indigenous people. So when we are conducting legal services, we do it with the aim of tapping some information of practice and law. Because in legal aid services, we can see a physical contact. When we test now the practicability of different laws which are enacted by the parliament, because client will come with different problems, and when we are serving them, we come to we tap some information with them, either some gaps relating to these laws, whether they conform to constitutions and some other things.
Okay.
We also, when we are conducting legal services, we aim at empowering the clients, so that when you empower one, we believe he will go and be use the same knowledge to educate his fellow citizen where he comes from. Also within the same program, realizing that Tanzania is a very big country, and we have very few centers which are mainly located in town. So we have now come up with a mobile legal aid services where we go to remote areas. We have conducted mobile legal services to different places, to people with needy who need some legal services. In the same category, we also conduct strategic cases. These are cases with the aim of bringing about reforms, legal reforms. This is another area where we have been very successful. We've conducted cases which to test the constitutionality of the law on corruption in election, and actually the court found out that the law was contrary to the constitution and declared that law null and void. In January this year, we have we were very successful in the Court of Appeal on a case which has broadened the mandate of the Commission of Human Rights and Good Governance. You know, our Commission of Human Rights and Good Governance is a new institution which was established 2001. So this was our first case to be taken to the Commission, in which now we wanted to see what would be the status of the recommendation of the Commission and its enforceability. So we have got the decision of the Court of Appeal that, which says, from now on, the recommendation of the Commission are supposed to be implemented by the government. Failure of that, a party can take the recommendation to enforce it at the High Court. So to us, that was a very good decision, and it is very strategic. Now, It has given more mandate on the Commission of Human Rights and Good Governance. So those are a few cases in which we pursue. So we pursue cases along those lines. Another category of cases is to build up a partnership between government and a private partnership with the aim of strengthening good governance. So how we do this, we have established a parliament watch. You know, parliament being a very important pillar of the state. So we work very closely with the members of parliament in ensuring that we take our recommendations to the parliament. To all bills which are in which public is the general public is invited for recommendations, and you know sometimes why we did that, because we realized in most cases members of parliament do not have enough time to consult their people, their constituency. So we saw that as an opportunity in which we can work with the members of parliament to strengthen this partnership so that we can have laws which are pro-human rights and will conform to the standards of human rights. We also have by parliament another watch. It is called a government watch. And this will monitor the performance of the government with a view of either advising sometimes issuing recommendations, taking some administrative measures sometimes to improve the situation. So what we do in all watches, what we have done is to gather some, we have consulted, actually, and formed up a panel of prominent people who are working either in a government watch. We have three to five people. These are either respected civil servants, retired civil servants, or maybe church religious leaders, church leaders, Muslim leaders, depending on the combination. So what we do is for them to meet them in each quarter in a year. They meet, they discuss, they look at the whole quarter, what happened in the whole quarter. And now they give us, we act as a secretariat to work on what they think we need to do, to take some administrative or other measures. Yeah, we also do some mass education within that. In the same line, also we have established Justice Watch. The three watches, Justice Watch. This looks at the judiciary and various issues. Like we have come up with the issue of delay of cases in courts, The question of technicalities. Our courts are very technical sometimes, to the extent of defeating substantial justice. Yeah. So, but they all work on the same. You have a panel. We, as a secretariat, this is our initiative. As a secretariat, we are fed by the panelists, and then we take matters forward. We also have the monitoring unit, human rights monitoring unit. What we did is to have a group of of monitors who are scattered all over Tanzania. In each district, we have one. They work covertly. What they are feeding us.
They work covertly.
Yes, yeah. Because sometimes if they are exposed, they might face a risk maybe of being maliciously prosecuted, you know, with the government sometimes. So, but it's not that much security, but we get them, some can be teachers, somebody who understands what are human rights issues. So that what they do, they give us feedback on some development of human rights situation where they come from. And if the matter is needs more attention, we can send a delegation of a team to do a fact-finding mission in that team. And the information from these paralegals, plus from media, from interview and other sources, we compile annual human rights report. So we are the only institution which produces annual human rights report in a year. This is a situation report in which we have, we expose human rights situation, and then we give recommendations. And we have, this book is very, this report is very useful to some stakeholders, mm-hmm. policymakers, mm-hmm. government officers. They're using the report. Yeah. Another is more on mass education. We have, this is another unit within the organization. This deals with now informing people about and trying to raise awareness of people on matters of human rights. We conduct TV programs, radio programs, and we have gone to the grassroots, especially to the remote areas, where we train paralegals. Mm-hmm. These are aimed at assisting their fellow villagers or at the local level to push some administrative or some legal, petty legal issues. So, because they are, we have trained them, they are capable, they are, they can understand some issues, and they can pursue some of those to those issues. So basically, this is, the third category was is more on the sustainability of the organization, because you know to make the organization sustainable is also a challenge. That's why we've designed to have a special unity which is dealing with the sustainability. Ensure that we have resources, we have the board, and the whole matters of sustainability mm-hmm. within the organization. So this is in brief who we are.
Sure.
Yeah.
Certainly sounds like you're doing a lot of important things in a number of different areas.
Yes.
So can I ask about your specific engagement with the police mm-hmm. on human rights issues? Mm-hmm. How does this interaction work, and what is your relationship with the police in terms of advocacy?
Mm. Yeah, with the advocacy, you know, we realize that police are a very important partner because at one point, matters of human rights were considered to be very foreign. Mm-hmm. So what we did when we started the organization like 10 years ago, that was the first initiative we took to with the police. What we did is to organize specific training to all regional police commanders of all the, of all regions, 25 regions. That was the first level to deal with them. And then we went to the next level of districts. We have more than 130 districts. Where we are divided, we have Tanzania is a state which has, within the state we have regions administratively, and then we have districts. So we went to the level of region where the police commanders within the region, they were all trained by us. And then we went to the level of district commanders. They were also trained. We also lobbied for having in place within the training, police training, to have their curriculum about human rights. After some, I'm told in America, lobbying has a very bad meaning.
Yes. Yeah.
But so what we did is advocacy, actually.
Advocacy.
But here, some other, we can say lobbing. It's okay. It does not connotate. What you mean here?
I understand.
So what we do is to actually influence changes. Yeah. So we influenced changes to the police to have the within the. Their curriculum, when they are training police officers at the college, now they've introduced the human rights subject within the police officers. So to us, this was a very positive step, because if we build the capacity of these police officers to know what are the human rights, then it is very useful. We have also designed specific booklets, small booklets, self-help kits, which educate people about what are their rights when they are arrested by police. Mm-hmm. And what is the duty of police when arresting? So with these, we widely circulate them so that if a person is comes into contact with the police, he'll be able to know what are his rights. Because sometimes, you know, police tend to use people's ignorance and then to maybe to to corrupt or anything. Mm-hmm. So once people are aware of their rights, then they can fight or they can tell the police what they think is their right. Mm-hmm. You know, in our system, I think it is very unfortunate. You know, police is considered to be very, it is perceived to be very corrupt, mm-hmm. the police force. In 1995, we had a commission on corruption, in which now police were identified as top four institutions which are very corrupt. So one of the areas in which police use it for the sake of getting corruption was bail. Because when they're arrested, you know, bail is a constitutional right. In your constitution says specifically, this is your right. So they could put somebody in custody, meantime, now for the sake of soliciting. So we were able to produce and go into very serious education to educate people about their right when they, because it is their right, bail is their right, with exception to some few offenses, which is treason and murder, where you cannot, the law specifically says no bail. The rest of the offenses are bailable. So this is what we have done. And even currently, we are working with the police. We have some reforms within the police. Reform, one of the very positive reform, they are now introducing gender and children desk in each region and each police station. So we are now working with the police to see, sometimes we go to train them to see, we are now working on how we can work together on this initiative by the police themselves on to have gender and the children desk. You know, these are very vulnerable groups, mm-hmm. children and women. So apart from that, we also, they contact us on some ad hoc basis to train their, especially their senior cadre officers on different issues of human rights. So this is how, in short, we work with police.
Okay. So would you mind if I asked a few questions just to clarify a few things on that? Mm. So you mentioned that human rights were for some time considered to be something of a foreign concept within the police force.
Mm.
Could you talk a little bit about how this manifested itself? I mean, you mentioned the issue of bail.
You know, what happened is, we had a constitution. Our constitution was a 1977 constitution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when we came up with the constitution, we did not incorporate the Bill of Rights in the constitution. So the Magna Carta was not there within the constitution. The Bill of Rights was incorporated in the constitution in 1984.
Okay.
So after it was incorporated, the government said it had to suspend the applicability of constitution for 5 years so that they could change laws, to keep the house in order.
Hmm.
So it was suspended up to 1988. Then 1989, it started being applied, the Bill of Rights in the constitution. And in 1992... we had now further amendment to the constitution to open up political parties,
mm-hmm.
multi-partyism and things of the like. So you can see the Bill of Rights actually is started being articulated in 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have seen even some opening of some political parties,
mm-hmm.
Civil society, including ourselves, were formed in 1995. Before that, we could not be formed because the law could not allow. So we could not have this opportunity. So even issues of human rights, nobody could be, they could not be articulated the way it is done now, because from which angle you start now advocating for these rights if they are not in the constitution in the first place. So from 90s actually we started a realization of these rights. So in short, so you can imagine the period between 90s to 2000, and it is very short period, I can say.
So and I'm sorry, so when did your specific training for the regional commanders begin?
That was in 2002 or 2003.
2002, okay.
Yeah.
So it's all fairly recent that you've got involved
in. Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I'm always interested in is how you sort of sell the idea of human rights to police forces. Because in some cases that we've heard of, the police are not too enthusiastic about it because they feel that these sorts of issues actually hamper them in doing their job and prevent them from being effective if they're schooled in sort of perhaps an old style where as you say, human rights are a little bit foreign. Mm. So how do you go about saying it's a necessity?
Yeah, we realized in our planning that we need to work with the police, not only police, even to prison officers and some other cadres within the government. So what we did is to have, and we used actually personal contacts, because sometimes reforms come within our region, depends sometimes on the, not only institution, also who is in that institution also counts sometimes. So we are lucky to have somebody within the police force. I think it was the, not the IGP, it was the DCI, Director of Criminal Investigation by then, who was ready to, we used the, now this lobbying, you know, in our context, in the meaning of our context, to see they give us a room to go and train them. So when we started to train them, and we got also assistance from the top police officers, even to go down to level the region, even at the district. Yeah.
So, you had a strong partnership with the top leadership.
Leadership, you are sure.
Which sort of gave you the access that you needed.
Yes.
And so when you're conducting this training, what is the curriculum that you use?
We developed actually for manuals.
Yeah.
We had the manuals which were prepared by us and definitely approved by their leadership. Mm-hmm. And but we had the control on the content of the course actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that what we did is to extract the content from the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. So we were able to take them, especially political and civil and political rights, the content of the curriculum was there.
I
don't know if we will have copies at our library, but we had some manuals to train, police manuals. If they are there, they might be in Kiswahili, but we can go and try to see if get some copies.
Be very interested to
see that. Yeah.
So one thing that I'm wondering, and I'm not entirely clear on your relationship with the Commission on Human Rights and Good Governance, because it seems that there's some overlap between the two organizations. Especially with regard to this issue of human rights training of the police.
So we started working in 1995, but the commission came in 2001. You see, so all this time we have been working, and sometimes people tend even to confuse between us and the commission, because we started working before they were enacted. They are constitutional body, and it's currently they also have some problems. Like now, they have not don't have enough staff to go around Tanzania and some other places. I think in some of the strategy we could be more effective than them because it is fairly a new institution. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. So. Are you, or have you developed any way of, measuring the effectiveness of the training that you do? To see whether it's really being absorbed by the and practiced by the people that you're training?
Yeah, sometimes because when we're dealing with advocacy, like change of behavior, with the legal reforms, you can tell maybe we're able to change this and that and that.
Yeah.
But some of these things are difficult, but especially when whether the police behavior has changed after we've done training, you know, it's very difficult to measure.
Yeah.
But we can see how they are responding to some of the issues. I told you, we are producing this annual human rights report.
Right.
Sometimes they come to us for this report to see how would we comment about them.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of the reforms now, they are like this question of gender, this women and the children desk.
Mm-hmm.
They have incorporated to a large extent the civil societies on how we can work together to improve the situation of women and children.
I see.
So it can be an impact in the sense we have opened up now, they consider us as partners.
Right.
Rather than people who are saying maybe some negative things against police.
Mm-hmm.
Like our report sometimes can be very rude to some, especially on the statistics, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we don't invent those. We mm-hmm. go through what the government offices, but they tend to take it very positive. Sometimes they make even reference mm-hmm. to this. Even members of parliament, when they're arguing some issues within the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how we deal with them, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I've taken a look at your 2007 report,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things I noticed in there, particularly with relation to the police, were issues like extrajudicial killings
mm-hmm.
and, issues of mob violence and mm-hmm. other issues of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering whether you develop targeted programs to deal with these specific issues, or is it more a broad
mm-hmm.
program that tries to inculcate a general sense of, mm-hmm. of what the Bill of Rights is?
Mm.
Or whether you have sort of more targeted interventions.
Yeah, you know, all of our interventions are done within 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You have targets set for 3 years.
Okay.
So maybe this is August. We are doing evaluation for the programs
mm-hmm.
for the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll come up with another program for 3 years. This can, because it gives us some to be more focused on some issues. So if you pursue an issue for 3 years, and then you can evaluate to see if you're successful, whether you need to continue with that or not. So what we have done is the targets, like the issue of mob violence, prison conditions, and
mm-hmm.
others. Maybe when we are doing this evaluation this year, we might think about some interventions in the future. Yeah. So like why do we produce that report? We want to expose to be an advocacy tool.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are saying maybe mob violence is increasing in Tanzania, then you have a reference to some of the documented mm-hmm. reports.
Mm-hmm.
So that is useful to that extent.
I see. Okay. And in terms of the current reform program that the Tanzanian police are undergoing, what do you see as some of the challenges facing the police and some of the things that they really need to address in order to perhaps improve their effectiveness? And maybe this is outside of the area of human rights specifically.
Mm. Yeah, what they need to do now is to work on how they can improve confidence from the people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a challenge in which we always pose to the police force. They have started, there's some initiative like now introducing community policing
mm-hmm.
and others. But you know, once people do not have faith on the force, it is very difficult to make some useful reforms within the police.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what they need to create an image where a police officer can be a friend of people rather than considered to be another somebody who will, or like a force, you know, force
mm-hmm.
somebody who uses force.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is one some of the things they need to do. And I can see actually, as you said, you know, there are some very remarkable improvement within the police force.
Mm-hmm.
We can see things are changing, and they have some support from people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the improvements that you have noticed as somebody who interacts with the police?
One is on accountability.
Mm-hmm.
No, it used to be now police, like when you go to police, it used to be very normal, like police harassing you, beating you when you are arrested. But some of the things now are dying away. Police cannot beat you without if you are not resisting arrest or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And question of bail, sometimes bail is used to be very difficult for one to be permitted on bail,
mm-hmm.
but now those are things that accountability of police themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in the past, police used to be doing things with some impunity, but now they're held accountable. You've heard about the case of this RPC, the Regional Police Commander, who organized these junior officers and they killed some two business people.
Mm-hmm.
You might have heard of that story. So that is a kind of accountability that we can see in the police force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even if police commit an extra judicial killing, we're going to see some are now being taken to court.
Mm-hmm.
So that itself is it's a change that is very positive within the police force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is actually not, it's not new institutional mechanisms or new regulations, it's just a new sort of ethos within the force itself, where they're basically adhering to things that should
best
have.
Best practices, yeah.
Okay, excellent.
And what they did is to change top leadership. Where a new guy who used to work with the Interpol, the
mm-hmm.
current AGP,
mm-hmm.
this is a guy who now is championing some reforms within the police. And I can see people responding to some of the initiatives he's trying to push.
I see. Well, thanks very much. I know you've got many other
things to do.
And I just wanted, before we end, I just wanted to give you, I don't know, maybe there's a key issue I haven't asked or something that you feel is quite important that I should bear in mind when looking at these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of an open question, or an open chance for you to say, if there's anything that I've missed.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you've covered most of the things. Yeah. Only we need to get feedback of this report when
sure.
you are done with it.
Yeah, no, sure, we'll definitely
do
that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right.